Bonjour, je suis très heureux d'accueillir aujourd'hui, conjointement avec Jean-Noël Robert, le professeur Nobuyoshi Yamabe de l'université Waseda à Tokyo. Je vais en fait tout de suite passer la parole à Vincent Etchinger, qui a été à l'origine de cette initiative et qui connaît beaucoup mieux le professeur Yamabe et son œuvre. Ce que je tiens à dire, c'est que les intérêts scientifiques du professeur Yamabe se trouvent dans une zone d'interaction qui m'est particulièrement chère, c'est la zone d'interaction entre philologie et iconographie. Et aussi archéologie, puisqu'il a renouvelé, et est toujours en train de renouveler, la question des techniques de méditation dans leur aspect visuel. Voilà. La manière dont ces visions ont pu être traduites dans la peinture et également la spécificité architecturale des grottes de méditation, notamment dans la région, celles qui ont été trouvées dans la région de Tourfan, etc. Sa venue à Paris est d'ailleurs, lui permet de reprendre l'étude d'un manuscrit du fonds Pelliot qui est au musée Guimet qui va être l'objet de la présente communication. Sans plus attendre, je laisse la parole à Vincent Etchinger.
Merci beaucoup. Vous avez déjà épuisé le sujet? Non, certainement pas. Mais effectivement, il y a un certain nombre de choses que j'entends évoquer, donc je ne m'évoquerai pas. Simplement, donc, je suis moi-même extrêmement honoré, flatté et ravi d'accueillir aujourd'hui ici mon éminent collègue et ami Nobuyoshi Yamabe. Donc je veux dire un certain nombre de mots sur sa carrière. Au fond, c'est une carrière remarquable au Japon, mais qui a commencé en fait aux États-Unis. Enfin, vous avez commencé à étudier les études bouddhiques au Japon, à l'université de Otani. Oui. Avant de vous rendre extrêmement rapidement du côté de Yale aux États-Unis, vous avez successivement réalisé deux masters, puis une thèse de doctorat qui a été tout à fait remarquée, que tout le monde possède, mais qui malheureusement, en dépit de promesses répétées, n'a jamais été publié pour l'instant. Mais je crois que vous y travaillez, n'est-ce pas? Et qui s'intitule, parce que je n'en ai pas le titre en tête, The Sutra of the Ocean-like Samadhi of the Visualization of the Buddha, The Interfusion of the Chinese and Indian Cultures in Central Asia, as reflected in a 5th century apocryphal sutra. Alors, Franz Grenet évoquait justement l'interface ou l'interaction justement entre philologie et art visuel ou production patrimoine visuel. Il y a une autre chose qui nous tient particulièrement à cœur et qui me tient particulièrement à cœur, c'est effectivement l'interface entre Asie centrale d'un côté, c'est-à-dire ce qu'on appelait le Turkestan et en particulier les voies septentrionales des soi-disant routes de la soie et l'Inde ancienne. Et effectivement, lorsqu'on considère votre production scientifique, on est frappé par le fait qu'il y a deux centres d'intérêt qui paraissent d'une certaine manière tout à fait distincts au public non averti. D'un côté, effectivement, le patrimoine ou des productions textuelles et visuelles de l'Asie centrale, du Turkestan chinois d'un côté, et l'idéalisme bouddhique de l'autre, dont vous êtes un éminent spécialiste, sinon le plus éminent spécialiste du moment, en tout cas au Japon. Et effectivement, Nobuyoshi Yamabe travaille actuellement beaucoup, pour une partie en tout cas de son œuvre, à une réinterprétation en profondeur de la question de l'alaya vijñāna, donc de la conscience du tréfonds, de la conscience réceptacle, qui se trouve être donc au cœur du dispositif, disons, épistémologique et gnosiologique du bouddhisme de tradition idéaliste. Alors ce qui, j'évoquais évidemment le nom spécialiste, pour celles et ceux qui connaissent l'œuvre de Yamabe, la chose n'est pas particulièrement surprenante, puisqu'il y a effectivement un trait d'union, ou en tout cas un commun dénominateur entre ces deux centres d'intérêt, qui est celui effectivement du yogacara, entendu dans un sens plus littéral. Yogacara qui signifie la pratique du yoga, mais évidemment aussi, comme si on interprète le composé d'une façon différente, ceux qui pratiquent le yoga. Et effectivement, Yamabe s'est beaucoup intéressé au premier texte de visualisation, au premier texte, aux premières productions textuelles de l'école Yogacara, pré-mahayaniste en Inde, mais aussi au Cachemire, évidemment, dans ses prolongements en Asie centrale. Et c'est ce qui fait, d'une certaine manière, l'unité d'une œuvre tout à fait remarquable qui, nous l'espérons, va se prolonger longtemps encore. Je laisse la parole.
Merci beaucoup, professeur Grunet et professeur Herzinger, pour vos présentations très aimables. Mesdames, mesdemoiselles, messieurs, bonjour et bienvenue. Malheureusement, mon niveau de français n'est pas suffisant. Donc, aujourd'hui, en principe, je m'exprime en anglais. Mais d'abord, s'il vous plaît, laissez-moi dire quelques mots de remerciement en français. Il va sans dire que c'est un grand honneur de venir donner une conférence au Collège de France, qui est bien sûr l'institution la plus prestigieuse de France. Je remercie sincèrement les professeurs Franz Grunet et Jean-Noël Robert de m'avoir donné cette grande opportunité. Je remercie aussi profondément le professeur Vincent Herzinger qui m'a beaucoup aidé pour organiser cette conférence. Aujourd'hui, je parlerai d'une peinture bouddhique de Don Juan conservée au musée Guimet. Cette peinture est aujourd'hui très difficile à observer en raison de son état avancé de dégradation. Je parlerai donc de la manière d'étudier ce type de peinture en utilisant la technique numérique. Il est peut-être difficile de répondre à vos attentes, mais je ferai de mon mieux pour rendre cette présentation aussi profitable que possible. Okay, let me change the English. I will talk about this painting at Musée Guimet. And obviously, this painting is based on this sutra, Guan Wulian Shoujin Jamitai's Visualization Sutra. And this is a very popular sutra in East Asia. And this, I guess many of you are already familiar with this sutra, but let me introduce very briefly. This consists of two parts. The first part is the introductory story, and the story is about a story of a coup d'etat that took place in the Indian state of Magadha. And there, Prince Ajatashatru imprisoned his father, King Bimisara, and then also his mother, Queen Vaidehi. And obviously, Queen Vaidehi was very unhappy because she was imprisoned by her own son. So she asked Shakyamuni Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha miraculously appears in front of her who is in prison, and she asked Shakyamuni, this world is so full of sorrow and misery, and I don't want to live in this world. So please show me some realm where there is no sorrow or pain. And Shakyamuni Buddha teaches that there is a land of bliss, Skavati, to the west, which is presided over by Amitayasa Buddha. And so if you are reborn in that world, you wouldn't experience any suffering. And Vaidehi says, then I want to see that land of bliss. And Shakyamuni teaches her how to visualize that land of bliss while being in this Saha world. And the visualization altogether consists of the 16 items to be visualized. And the first portion is the visualization of the Skavati, the land of bliss. And the second portion is the visualization of the presiding Buddha, Amitayas. The third portion is the visualization of the nine boards of rivers. So there are nine classes of people, very virtual people, wicked people. You know, they are all reborn by the grace of Amitayas. And so all together, The most important portion is these two, and these two visualizations consist of the 13 items, as you see here. And since this sutra, the content of this sutra is so pictorial, we can expect, it's not a surprise that often the content of this sutra was depicted in art. And in Dong Huan, there are many art still surviving. And also, many paintings were brought to European museums, such as Musée-Guimet, British Museum, and also Hermitage Museum. And those paintings are often called transformation tableau. This is not exactly the right translation, but the Chinese word is bianxian, and the literal translation is transformation tableau, so it is often referred to as transformation tableau. And if you're interested, I think the best source on in French on this text and painting is this one by Jerome Ducourt and Helen Labdi. So if you're interested, please refer to this book. And I myself have published several articles on these paintings. So based on these articles, let me discuss one particular painting stored at Musée-Guimet, just MG 17669. And this is a published image in this Réserve de la Vie Centrale. And although this, you know, as a whole, this is a very valuable publication, but for this particular painting, you know, this monochrome painting is very unclear, and obviously because the original painting is unclear, so the picture is unclear. So it's very difficult to work on this image. And another published image is this one, and this one is better, but this, as you see, is only partial. So again, it's difficult to work on this published image. And actually, relatively recently, some restoration work was carried out on this painting. And so now the situation is slightly better. And this is a restored image, but still it's not clear enough. So I took a professional photographer to Paris and let him take a high resolution picture. And this is our own picture. And again, I know this is not clear enough. But this is how the painting looks right now. And so we took infrared picture, and this is slightly better. We can see the many details. And then I did some digital restoration. And so this is composite of processed visible light picture plus processed infrared picture. And for this kind of digital processing, I gave details in this publication. So if you are interested, please refer to these articles. Basically, this is not my original. You know, I'm just following specialists in this field. And basically, first, you know, for observing the contours, the lines, infrared picture is most helpful. However, infrared picture efface, you know, infrared picture on picks up only carbon lines drawn in carbon ink, and other colors are all effaced. So infrared is not omnipotent. So you know, colors are of course very important for observing paintings. So and I guess the best thing is observing the contours restored by through infrared picture, and then we add the color information to that contours, and then we get a better image. And also, what I did in this particular case is what makes the observation of this particular painting difficult is the painting is yellowed all over. So if you remove that yellowish overtone and enhance the other existing colors, then we can get a more observable image. Yeah, so this is the image I worked on. And the basic structure of Scavati painting, and particularly this Guimet painting, is this one. So right-hand strip, we find the frame story, story of the coup d'etat in Magadha. And the central part shows a magnificent picture of the Pure Land. And the left side strip shows the visualization technique. So this portion shows the story from bottom to top. And this is the pure land, Skarbati. And this portion shows the visualization technique, the method from top to bottom. Yeah. And after restoring that image, I found that this Gimme painting is in many ways very similar to this another Dunhuang painting. Dunhuang 316 stored at Hermitage Museum. This is the chronology. Yeah, and so I compared the content. I focused on the visualization portion, the left-hand side strip, and I compared the content of that visualization portion of the Gimme painting and Hermitage painting with the original sutra teaching. And as you see, actually there, you know, the colored parts are problematic parts. And so there are many deviations from the source text. Yeah, so what is happening? This is my basic question. Okay, so let's look at these paintings one by one. The first, according to the sutra, you first visualize or observe the setting sun and impress that image of the setting sun in your mind so that you can see the image of the sun even if you are not seeing the actual sun. So the first image is the sun. So this is a restored image of Mizugime painting, and this is Vaidehi, the heroine of this sutra, and she is looking at the setting sun. So this is fine. And by the way, this is the infrared image. So as I said, lines are clearly observable in this infrared image, but this sun completely disappears. Yeah, so that's why I'm saying that infrared is not perfect. We need to see both color and infrared. Yeah, and then if you look at this is the corresponding portion of the Hermitage painting, and as you see, these two are very similar. Yeah, but and actually, you know, we have sketches that might have been and. The nature of this sketch has been debated recently, and somebody says that this was used for the basis of the paintings by the painters, but somebody says this is just a casual copy of the existing painting. So the exact nature is a bit unclear, but I think it's possible that the painters sketched the existing painting and casually, and then used it as a basis for a new painting. So a sketch of existing painting and the basis for new painting can be cannot be contradictory to each other, I think. And anyway, in this sketch, we find this kind of image that is similar to this one and this one. So this is, anyway, this is a sort of established iconography among Dunhuang painters, we can see. And as you see, according to the dating, you know, this is the, by GS, I think, and this is by the Russian scholars. And anyway, this is a bit later than this painting. And if you compare these two, they are indeed very similar, but in some detail, here, Vaidehi is slightly looking up, as it should be, because she's looking at the setting sun. But here, Vaidehi is looking right into in front of her without showing any interest in the sun. So clearly, this one was painted less carefully than this one. Yeah, and I think this fact coincides with this chronology. So I think this one is one generation later than this painting, and sort of, you know, tried to imitate this painting, but was not totally successful. Yeah. Then, next portion. These are the three ponds. So first, as I said, you visualize the setting sun, and I think sun sets to the west, and the paradise, Amitai's the Skavati is to the west. So, you know, I think, what's it, the setting sun is the first clue to imagine and the land of bliss to the west. And this is the first step. And then the second step is this three pond. This is a regular water pond, a pure water pond. And this is ice pond. And this is Vaidurya, a jewel pond. And okay. And this is what the text says. I'm quoting from Dukor. And so there are three ponds, La Prestion de Ro. So this is the water pond, and then the Commodore Glass. So this is the ice pond, Prestion Commodore Vaidurya. Vaidurya is buried, which is a transparent jewel, something like a crystal. And by association with this buried image, according to the Buddhist tradition, the ground of Skavati is made of buried by Durya, and so it is transparent. But obviously, you know, we have never seen transparent ground, so it's very difficult to imagine. So I think this is a sort of a device to imagine something we have never seen. So first, we see water. Of course, everybody has seen water, so water is easy to imagine, and then ice also. Everybody has seen. So ice. Water and ice are easier to imagine, but Vaidurya ground is difficult. So from easy step, we go up to the more difficult step, I think. And indeed, you know, so these are the ponds, right? And again, very similar between this one and this one. Okay, and these ponds are found in other Dongfang paintings. So this also seems to have been a fixed pattern, fixed design. And in one of the sketches also we find, this is fragmentary, but we see a similar pond. So this must have been a fixed tradition among the painters. So far, so good. But if you see these paintings closely, there is some problem. The problem is that, you know, this ice pond and a jewel pond look almost the same, no problem. But if you look at this one and this one closely, this one does look like a pond because this water level is a bit below the ground level. But if you look at this one carefully, why? This water level looks higher than the ground level. This is unreasonable, you know. This is quite clearly strange. So something was wrong. And why so? And, well, of course, the painter did a mistake, but how that mistake took place? And this is, of course, a guesswork, but as I said, in those days, painters used sketches as a basis for their work. And Sir Fraser worked extensively on these sketches, and the production process, execution process of these paintings in Dongfang. And she says, the inherent mobility of figures, what she means is that, particularly for the cave paintings, mural paintings, often the same motifs are repeated in many Dongfang caves. But in terms of the caves, the sides of the cave and the side of the wall on which the painters have to do their job are always different. And the proportions of the width and height and also different. So you cannot mechanically repeat the same framework again and again. So depending on the size of the wall, you have to rearrange the relevant figures. That's what she says. And so if you look at the sketches, typically, this is one of the sketches stored at Bibliothèque Nationale here in Paris. And this is for this is not for the Skavati painting. This is another story. But you know, so this is a sketch. And this is a part of a detail of the finished mural painting. And mural painting is just really huge. Yeah. And this is only part. And so since the finished painting is so huge, it's impossible to show all the details in sketches. So typically sketches show only the significant details. Yeah. So for example, by the way, this is a story about a magic competition between Shariputra, of course, is one of the major disciples of Shakyamuni Buddha, and Raudraksha is a leader of the non-Buddhist masters who are against Buddhism. So they sort of competed to each other, and each of them showed some magical powers and tried to decide which was a greater master. And of course, this is a Buddhist story, so just a non-Buddhist guy is defeated. And if you look at the sketch, here, some guy is beating a drum. And in the finished painting, so this is Raudraksha, so the boss of the non-Buddhist masters. And they appear in the corresponding position. So this is okay, no problem. And then, this one apparently is a wind deity, and he appears here, and here he appears a bit further from the dais, and but also in a similar position. And then how about these defeated non-Buddhist masters? In this painting, they appear here, but in this painting, they appear here. So quite different places, and then. This standing lady, and in this painting she appears here, but in this painting she appears here. So, quite different placement. You know, the depiction of this lady is almost completely the same. So, quite likely they use the same sketch as a basis for both paintings. But how to arrange that figure was based on sort of ad hoc assessment. You know, how to arrange all the major figures in the limited space, you know. So, in a way, they felt quite free to move those relevant figures in different paintings. And this is, you know, two examples of Scavati painting, right? And visualization. So again, sun, water, etc. And look at this one. And this is a 13th visualization of a Buddha. So a Buddha standing on a pond, right? So this is quite exact, accurate depiction of the sutra passage. But look at this one and this one. You know, again, we see very similar Buddha. But the placement is different. And here, these are the depictions of the nine classes of rivers. So this is the 13th item. So this should come near the end of the visualization portion. So this is the correct position. And this position is clearly wrong. But I think they did this kind of repositioning all the time. So I think for the Scavati painting also, they felt quite free to move these figures, you know, for no reason. So the placement is different, but that doesn't mean that they had different interpretation of meditation technique or different kind of text. And that doesn't, you know, it wasn't the case. They just, you know, painters felt free to move the figures here and there. And so it means that each scene was treated separately and was transposed freely, and if that was the case. Again, this is the first pawn, supposedly pawn, but this doesn't look like one. It looks like a plateau. And the second pawn indeed looks like a pawn. And then what happened? As I said, they were using a sketch as a basis for this painting, probably. And each sketch was treated separately. If so, perhaps some careless guy had, you know, misplaced a sketch and put it upside down. And then a pound becomes a plateau. Yes, that's my guess. And another way of explaining it is that, you know, just above this pond, there is, as I said, visualization of the sun. And here is a cliff. And this cliff and this one sort of looks similar. So maybe the mind of the painter was influenced by the cliff right above this image. And that is the second interpretation. So whichever was the case, I don't know. But anyway, and the painter of this painting was clearly less careful than the painter of this painting, I think. Excuse me. Okay, next portion. Well, these are clearly trees. That's fine. But we see some strange, what's this, bell or Christmas tree or something sad. I'm not quite sure what it is. But anyway, in the two paintings, again, we see something very similar with some X mark, you know, and three trees. Okay. And so a bell or a parasol or a Christmas tree or whatever. And then trees. And trees correspond to this duality. This is okay. But as I said, after the Baiduria pond, there should be a jewel ground. But instead of the jewel ground, we see some strange bell or parasol or something like that. What's this? And actually, in the central portion depicting the Pure Land, we see this kind of big umbrella-like object. And if you look at them carefully, we see net, you know, net. So this is a huge net with some petals here. What are they? Okay. And if you look at the earlier paintings, this is the earliest extant painting of this Guanjinbian Shan in Dunhuang. And if you look at it, you know, these trees with net and small houses, and here also something quite similar. And sorry, it is small, but this is my own translation, because here my interpretation is a bit different from Ducor's interpretation. Marvelous palmets cover up the trees. On each tree, there are sevenfold nets, and in each mesh of the net, there are 500 coates of marvelous. Coate is a unit of number, a big number, of marvelous flower palaces like those of a Brahma king, etc. So, according to the text, the jewel trees in the Scabati are covered with pearl net. So, indeed, we see net. And so, these small houses are depictions of the Brahma's palaces. So, these paintings are quite okay, faithful to the sutra. And these are other depictions of Scabati in Dunhuang. And again, we see net and small houses. And this is clearly a tree with a trunk and leaves. And this is also, I'm sorry, a bit unclear, but we see a net and small houses and leaves. So both of them are depicting trees in Scabati. But the problem is that they both look quite sort of artificial, you know, man-made objects. So they don't really look like natural trees. So I think sometimes it's difficult to understand what they are meant to be. And if you are familiar with the story of the sutra, the content of the sutra, you of course know that in the Scabati, there are trees, and trees are covered with pearl net and Brahma's palaces. But if you are unfamiliar with the sutra, you may not know what they are really meant to be. So, and I think what I'm suspecting is that probably in Dunhuang, painters were not really reading sutra. Yeah, so they were not familiar with the content of the text. Yeah, so as a result, they didn't know what to do. So they just depicted big, you know, some bell-like object with teeth. And when it is simplified, it has become this one. Yeah, so this is a remnant of the big net, I think. And we see petals here. And this fringe or petal, I don't know. So, yeah, and so which means that since, so this is a result of transformation or misunderstanding of the tree image. But here we see tree image. So the original tree image is sort of surviving. And right next to that tree image, we have some deformed tree image. Yeah, so it is strange, but this is another sculpted painting also stored at Mizugime. And here also, this is clearly a tree, and this looks like a banner, but I think this is also a result of misunderstanding of the tree image. So some strange bifurcation was taking place. So the originally the same image was sort of split into two different images. One has become something like a parasol or a bell or whatever, and the tree image is also remaining. Yeah, so strange, but that was the case, I think. And then the following part. This is the palace of Amitais, and these are the ponds in Skavati. So again, these are okay. And if you look at, this is the Hermitage painting, and again, very similar. And particularly if you look at the depiction of the roof, they look similar, so clear, very likely this one was modeled after this one. But if you look at these paintings carefully, this palace is two-storied, but this one has only one story. So here, probably the painter of this painting was sort of lazy, I think. So they just left out the second story, and only the first story was remaining, I think. Yeah. And then we see some strange box with petals. And this one. And no such item is found in the original text. This is a place where a lotus seed should be. Yeah. And, you know, so up to this point, you visualize Skavati as a pure land. And then you start visualizing Amitais himself. But again, it's difficult because we have never seen Amitais in this world. So, first thing you visualize is a lotus seat on which Amitais is seated. Because lotus flower, you know, is so common in this world. We can see lotus flower everywhere. So it's easy to imagine. And then we visualize statues of Amitais and his two attendants, Avalokiteshvara and Mahastama Prapta, because statues are much easier to imagine than the Buddha. So first, again, first the easy steps, and then we visualize living Amitais and his two attendants. Yeah. So according to the sutra, there should be a lotus seed, but we don't see lotus seed. We see something else. But again, this kind of box with petals is also sort of common in other Dunfam Pyeongchang paintings, as you see here and here. And also, if you look at other Dunfam paintings, we find similar box or pedestal with petals, but on which a vase is standing. Yeah, you know, all these. And this one is another huge sculpted painting of the Mizugime. And this one also has a vase. And this portion has peeled off, so we cannot see. But probably there must have been flower originally. Yeah. And again, if you look at, this is one of the earliest sculpted paintings extant in Dunhuang Mogao Cave. We find this one, quite similar, pedestal and petals, and on which a lotus seat is seated. Yeah, you know. So Likely, this again is a result of transformation of the lotus seed image, indeed. And in other Dunhuang paintings, all depicting Scabati, we find these are all clearly lotus seeds. Okay. And in sort of later paintings, we find these images. So vase is a flower, and vase. And this one has an inscription, now illegible, but according to Chinese scholar, it read seventh features of a jewel vase. So this one was clearly understood as a vase. But as I said again and again, vase does not appear in the original text. And also, if you look at this one, this is a vase with petals, and it is sitting on the surface of water of a pond. And this is clearly very strange. Of course, a vase doesn't stand on the surface of a pond, right? And if you look at this one, this lotus seed is standing in the pond. And in this case, it's quite okay. Basically, this is a lotus flower, of course, it grows from a pond, right? So it's very likely somehow this image was misunderstood as this image. And how did that happen? Again, after this is just a guesswork. But my guess is that, as I said, painters didn't read the text. Yeah. So they were not familiar with what they were supposed to depict. So lotus seeds. Of course, lotus seed is a very popular image in Buddhist painting. So, and usually, on that lotus seat, a Buddha is seated. So, lotus seat with a Buddha is easy. Everybody can understand what it means. But a lotus seat without a Buddha is highly unusual, you know. So, maybe some painter didn't understand what this stuff mean. And I think perhaps some hasty painter looked at, for example, this one. And what's this? It's strange, but maybe this is a vase in which a big flower is put. Yeah. So they thought that this is a vase. And as a result, and for a vase, this is too small and the flower is too large. So they made it more, you know, natural looking. So the vase became larger and the flower became smaller. So I think this was a result of their misunderstanding. Yeah, that's one possibility. And then, for some reason, they forgot this vase and only the pedestal remained. And this one is very similar to this one, right? And right after this strange box, we see the Buddha image. And this very likely is the eighth item of the visualization, the statues of Amitesthira. So the order is retained in this case. And that also suggests that this was originally a lotus seed. Yeah, so this way. And in the Gimé painting, this portion is lost, so we can't compare. But in the Hermitage painting, we see this portion. Yeah. So there are two steps of misunderstanding. Originally, it was a lotus seed on the box, and then it became vase on the box. And finally, only the box survived. Yeah. And then the final portion, we see this. And this portion is quite fragmentary in the Musée Gimé painting. And in the Hermitage painting, we see Buddha and Bodhisattva. And this looks like a child, but anyway, this must be Bodhisattva. So far, so good. But then the big problem is that in the Musée Gimé painting, this portion is fragmentary and lost, but originally there must have been some more items. But in the Hermitage painting, this is clearly the end. Yeah. And so Musée painting, the bottom portion is fragmentary, so there must have been some more. But in the Hermitage painting, these are donuts, so the visualization portion ends here. So it is clearly incomplete. right? So we see one Buddha and one Bodhisattva, but according to the sutra, there must have been, you know, two Buddhas actually, statue of the Buddha and living Buddha and two Bodhisattvas, and then your own reverse and Amitai's triad. Yeah, but in the music image, probably originally there were these paintings, but now they are lost. But in the Hermitage, from the very beginning, these items did not exist, right? So again, this is strange. So how can we explain these deviations? Yeah. And so it was impossible to complete the visualization taught by the sutra based on this painting. And this painting is also quite different from the sutra content. So even based on this Gimme painting, it's impossible to complete the visualization practice as taught in the Amitayist Visualization Sutra. Okay, so anyway, so there are many, many deviations in these paintings from the source text. And how can we explain these deviations? Yeah. And one, you know, easy solution is that they were based on some variant text or variant manuscript. So variant text, led to variant paintings. This is something people can easily think of. And this is another relatively late Sukhavati painting from the Song period. And if you look at this, visualization of the sun and three ponds, and then again some strange object, etc., etc. And this, and we see the inscriptions, right? And so this one says the first visualization of the sun, and this is okay. But this one said three visualization of the blue lotus flower. And blue lotus flower doesn't appear in the list of the original text. And why three is here, you know? And number two is here. Number two, water becomes ice. And this is number four, water pond. And so everything is sort of in confusion, right? And this becomes banner, maybe, a banner. And this one says what? Woods, etc. And this is that Baoping one. Jewel vase visualization. And this says Amitai's visualization, but the painting clearly is not Amitai's. This is just a monk. Yeah. So everything is strange. Okay. And actually, there are some manuscripts at the Biblioteca Nacional, Pedro Sino 335352, and that lists the inscriptions. And this in this manuscript, we find something. For example, water becomes ice visualization, and lotus flower visualization, etc. And this one. So, and this is still another manuscript, and it said water becomes ice, and lotus flower, etc. So. One might think that this kind of variant manuscript was the basis for that kind of variant painting. Yeah. But that hypothesis is a bit difficult because this one is copied in a very careless manner. For example, this one should be Ryuri, but it said Ryuri. So clearly miscopied. And this one also, top middle class, top class, and top bottom class. So the natural number is top and top middle and top bottom. But this one and this one are inverted. Yeah, so these manuscripts are written in very careless manner. And this one? Is the original manuscript. As you see, this is written in a very careless manner. And this is another painting. And again, there are many sort of strange mistakes in these paintings. And again, the manuscript is not written very carefully. And one Chinese scholar, Xiao Dian, studied these manuscripts quite carefully. And his conclusion is that these manuscripts or the inscription of mural paintings discovered in the Dufan Library cave are for the most part copied from the mural paintings in the caves. Only a few might have been drafted for mural paintings. So you know, his argument is that these copies are too careless to be the source for those inscriptions. Yeah, and also, anyway, it's difficult to conclude that the deviations in these paintings were based on these manuscripts. And the relation is vice versa. First, the mistake took place in the paintings, and then inscriptions followed those mistaken paintings, and then those inscriptions were simply copied in these notes. So these manuscripts do not explain the deviations in the paintings or inscriptions. They're just casual copies of the inscriptions. And those inscriptions do not explain the deviations of the painting from the sutra. So rather, what happened is, first, painters did make mistakes, and that was recorded in the inscriptions and manuscripts. So we have to look for some other solution for these deviations. And this one looks quite out of context, but and as you see, this is a painting executed by a Japanese painter in the 16th century. You know, and this is a very nice Western style Jesus Christ, right? And why did a Japanese guy in the 16th century paint this kind of perfectly Western style Jesus Christ? Clearly because and this one has a signature, Jacob Niwa. Jacob is just a Christian name, so just Niwa, clearly a Japanese name. So this one was done by Japanese, no problem about that. And there was, and my colleague at Waseda, Kojima Yoshi, she is a specialist of this kind of Christian painting, and she studied this painting carefully, and according to her, Jacob Niwa was trained at a seminary of painters run by Giovanni Cola, who was an Italian Jesuit painter. So, Japanese guy was trained by Western specialists. That's why he could execute this kind of perfectly Western painting in the 16th century. And in the 16th century, for a short period, relatively short period, Catholicism was quite successful in Japan. Many missionaries came and they got many converts. Yeah, but as you may know, after that, Japanese rulers changed their mind and they banned Catholicism, Christianity. And all the believers were very severely persecuted and all the missionaries were kicked out of Japan. So no, this kind of professional training was available during the almost entirety of the Edo period. And then what happened? They tried to copy this kind of image without any professional guidance. And it became this way. Okay. So first of all, this guy doesn't really look Western, you know. And what does this I'm not a specialist of Christian painting, but this right hand is clearly giving blessings, right? And he is holding a globe called orb, and this signifies the world, right? And so this is a traditional image of ruler, even in the Roman art we can find this kind of image. So clearly this shows that Jesus Christ is a ruler of the whole world. Yeah, but I guess the world on which he rules is a speech world, so a cross is standing on that globe. And so everything has symbolic meaning, but those symbolic meanings were apparently all forgotten in this painting. And you know, this one was this blessing hand, but doesn't like giving blessing, it's something like beckoning his friend, right? And that doesn't look like a globe. To me, it looks like a balloon. Yeah. And this cross, you know, looks like a cord, you know, on his garment. Yeah. So clearly, all the symbolic meanings are forgotten. And another. Well, yes. Okay. So what's this? You know, this doesn't look like a blessing hand. This looks like a primary school student raising his hand. And balloon is here, but the cross is separated from the balloon, and it becomes a pendant. And this was obviously this was originally the halo, yeah. But yeah, it becomes like you know, here or something. Yeah. So clearly, everything is very strange. Yeah. So my guess is that you know, to the traditional religious art. You know, this kind of thing happens when professional guidance has become no more available. Yeah, and my suspicion is something similar was happening in Dunhuang. Yeah. Okay, so my final conclusion. These music and painting and Hermitage painting are very closely related. And music and painting seems to have been, but music and painting seems to have been more carefully executed. And for both paintings, the painters did not refer to the source text. The painters were not familiar with the content of the sutra. And Labdi makes a similar observation procedures on this sojour. Notre que les artistes n'avaient pas une connaissance approfondie et de texte qu'ils illustraient. So very similar observation. And And this Hermitage painting was probably copied from music and painting itself or something very similar to the music and painting. And that coincides with the relative chronology. And but both paintings greatly deviate from the sutra. And also, it is impossible to complete the visualization using this painting. So, okay. And so, anyway, what I think is that, you know, in Dunhuang, very early excavated paintings agree with the content of the sutra very nicely. Yeah. So, just like that Jesus Christ painting in the 16th period. So, at that period, at the very beginning, some learned monk, you know, familiar with the sutra, were guiding the painters, you know. So sutra says this and this, so you should paint first this one, and then this one, and this one. And so the basic pattern was established for the scabbardy painting. And once the pattern was established, painters saw that now they can do their job by themselves without monk's guidance. So they started to do their job by themselves. But as I said, they were not familiar with the text, so gradually misunderstanding accumulated. So more and more deviations from the sutra, you know, took place. Yeah. So as you saw, we see many strange deviations from the sutra. So that's what I think. Thank you very much for your kind attention.